Ladies and gentlemen, a very, very good evening to you. It's always a huge pleasure to be invited to take part in FELA and particularly this event. It's always well supported tonight for some reason, especially well supported. My fame must be spreading. But anyway, it's a delight to see such a full room. It always gets very warm in here, not just with the debate, but with all the warm bodies. And be prepared to take your jackets off as the evening progresses. So, as Carol said, it's all about you. We have four guests here who are ready to take your questions. I don't know who's going to ask the questions. I don't know what the questions are. Obviously, neither do our panelists. So it's all up to you. I would just ask you on all occasions to play the ball, not the man or woman. We'll try not to libel anyone or insult anyone or otherwise treat them than with the very finest of West Belfast hospitality. So, without any further ado, let me introduce our panel. Starting to my right, Ona Brin, who's a political theorist, a writer, and a Sinn Féin councillor in Dublin. He's from Dunleary. He was a city councillor in Belfast from 2001 to 2004, when I first got to know him. Don't think he had a beard then, Owen, did you? You were beardless in those days. National organiser for Ogre Sinn Féin, director of European affairs for the party, has run for the Dáil and the Shannon. He says that James Connolly is one of his role models. Round of applause, please, for Owen. Gavin Robinson is a DUP MP for East Belfast, a seat he grasped out of the hands of Naomi Long at this year's election. He was a city councillor for 5 years, from 2010 to 2015. He was Lord Mayor in the year 12 to 13 and received, I think it's fair to say, universal plaudits for the way he conducted himself in that office on that year. He studied law at Queen's and has a master's in Irish politics. To my left, I'm pleased to introduce you to the devil. At least that's what he's known as in Blairite circles in Westminster these days. It is, of course, Jeremy Corbyn, the MP for Islington, where he... Yeah. Member of Parliament since 1983, very much his own man. I read that he has defied the party whips more than 500 times in his career. You may have noticed that he's the current front runner in the Labour leadership contest. That's probably passed you by. Long-time supporter of Irish unity. And I hope this is right, 5 times winner of the Parliamentary Beard of the Year contest. A man well qualified on every front. And then, I couldn't grow one if I waited for 500 years, Jeremy. I've got about 3 hairs there and 2 there. Our last member is Nuala McKeever. Again, we'll need very little introduction. Her role model, not so much James Connolly as James Young. Former colleague of mine on the Spotlight programme, and then she saw the light, joined the Hole in the Wall gang, and has that for the last number of years had a very successful solo career, creating such characters as our Mickey's Ma and Hilary Hamilton, and now a very well-established playwright, has been to in her own show in the Edinburgh Fringe, until very recently a columnist on the Belfast Telegraph, and is about to head off to a retreat for a few weeks where she may or may not write her next show. Yes. So, big round of applause, please, for Nuala McKeever. Right, who's first? Right, there's a gentleman in the middle of that row, Bill, with a black crew neck on. And just so that we all know, if you could just say your name, and if you represent any organisation, please say which it is, so that everybody knows where you might be coming from.
I'm Patrick Morgan, and I'm a member of the Ireland-Palestine Solidarity Campaign. On behalf of the organisation, I would like, first of all, to welcome Jeremy back to Belfast. We were glad to have him 2 years ago as a speaker at Palestine Day. which will be on again tomorrow. My question to the panel, and to everyone on the panel, is that given the continuing slaughter of the people in Palestine, I mean, with over 2,000 people killed last summer, over 500 of those were children. Last week, with an 18-month-old baby who was burned to death by an Israeli settler, there's been a total destruction of the infrastructure. Thousands of people are still displaced from their homes.
Yeah, I think we know the background better. You have a question?
The question is, can the panel give hope to the people of Palestine by supporting the movement for boycott, divestment and sanctions against Israel?
Thank you.
Gavin.
Thanks very much, Noel, and good evening, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here with you and to see so many turned out, and I'm humble enough to recognise it's not for me or Owen or Nuala, but it is a privilege to be here. I think it was Patrick Morgan, is it Patrick? Yeah, Patrick, thanks for the question. I approach the Middle East, Israel, Palestine with a huge deal of caution. One, because it's very easy from Northern Ireland perspective, and we've seen it over the last number of years, how people from one side or another here seem to associate themselves with one side or another in Palestine and in Israel. I don't think that's helpful, and I don't think it does a service to the issues. Your question, in my view, is incredibly unbalanced. And whilst I don't take away one bit from the individual atrocities you've mentioned, there was no mention at all of rocket attacks in Israel. There was no mention at all of the fright and the fear and the threat of death, persecution and annihilation that Israel feels. And I think if you're going to find a suitable solution, if you're going to find a workable solution, then you've got to recognise that it doesn't just cut one way. So that's the way I approach Israel and Palestine. I do believe Israel has a right to exist as a country. I do believe that people on both sides have the ability and should have the ability to live free from the fear of attack. Free from the fear that they will lose their lives simply for existing. And, you know, so I don't see it as cut and dry. I don't see it as one side being wholly good and the other side
wrong. So you see it as offering hope to the people of both countries, not hope to the Palestinians?
Absolutely, and I think any solution is going to take recognition of that, not simply from one side, but recognising that there is more than one argument to be had there, that it's been an intractable issue for the last 60 years or more.
And how might you offer that hope?
Well, I know that many have tried, so I'm not going to provide the answer, I suspect, and I'm not sure that many in the Middle East would be listening to what I had to say. But I think if you start from the premise that there has been loss on both sides, that it isn't as easy as the question suggests, and that not only one part of the community suffers, then I think you're on a better road to finding that solution.
Thanks, Gavin. Jeremy, you have said that it's important to talk to everybody in the Middle East.
Yes. Can you hear me all right?
Yep.
Yeah, first of all, thank you very much for inviting me to West Belfast. I'm really pleased to be here, and I hope I can come again in the future. Points on the issue. I've been 9 times to Palestine and Israel over many, many years, and I know people on all sides of opinion in both Israel and in Palestine. And I was most recently in Gaza, and the sheer levels of destruction in Gaza are quite unbelievable, where people are living amongst rubble, families trying to survive, under siege, and living with supplies coming from the UN and really no functioning economy whatsoever. People on the West Bank finding themselves under occupation, finding an increase in the number of settlements. There are now 500,000 settlers in the West Bank, and the development of the wall around the West Bank means that many farmers lose access to their land, and the levels of anger are quite palpable and quite unbelievable. I was when I was last in Gaza. During the time I was there, there was a house demolished by an F-16 jet. I don't know why. I don't know what the purpose for it was. All I know is during the night, an F-16 jet came in, destroyed that house, killed all the members of the family except 2 that were outside the building at the time. And I went into the building the next day, and the remaining edge of the building, the clock had stopped at the point where the bomb landed. Horrific and awful. Reason? I know not. But what I do know is that there has to be some kind of peace process, and that peace process has to be strong, robust, and inclusive. The European Union and Israel have a trade agreement, and that trade agreement includes a human rights clause. That human rights clause is being breached. It's being breached where children are in prison. It's being breached by the occupation. It's being breached by the imprisonment of elected parliamentarians from Gaza and from the West Bank. And I think consequences should follow from that. Therefore, there is already some restriction, very limited restriction, on arms purchases and arms supplies. I think the boycott campaign, divestment campaign, is part and parcel of a legal process that has to be adopted. But what I'd also say is this, that I have met people from all sides in this, and there is an example here in Northern Ireland. A peace process came about here because there was recognition of the traditions of all communities. And that peace process, uneven, difficult, complicated, problematic, but still there and in action. I think there has to be that same process involving all sides. That's why I've met people with whom I do not share many of their social values, but I do recognise the political support that they have, and I think one has to do that.
And what consequences, Jeremy, for the people who are firing rockets into Israel and wouldn't care how many they killed if they did kill more?
Well, a ceasefire was agreed at the end of Operation Protective Edge. That ceasefire came about because of proximity talks that were held in Egypt. That surely is a starting point. The British Parliament voted for the recognition of Palestine on a non-binding motion. Most European parliaments have done the same. Surely there has to be recognition of the rights of Palestinian people, but also recognise that there are people in Israel who, yes, do support the occupation and do support the continued bombardment of Gaza, but there are also very large numbers of people in Israel, 10,000, who turned out on demonstrations opposing the bombing and want to live in peace with their neighbours.
In a couple of words, a two-nation solution?
Well, the solution
is that where the hope lies?
The hope lies, I think, in Israel recognising it's got to live within the 1967 borders. The hope lies in the recognition of Palestine will lead us forward on this. The hope lies in the liberation of people to lead their own lives. I've sort of gone so long, but let's conclude with this thought. I have spent a lot of time in Gaza and the West Bank talking to young people. It might surprise you to know the highest level of graduates anywhere in the world are in Palestine. You have a very well-educated population. The education system, primarily UN, but others as well, is actually very good. Think of the hopelessness of living under siege, can't work, can't travel, can't do anything other than vicariously see the rest of the world through a computer or a TV screen. Those young people deserve hope and deserve opportunity. People denied hope and opportunity end up in often very, very bad places. It's up to the rest of the world to recognise that you've got to encourage them back to the negotiating table. And I believe that sanctions against Israel because of its breach of the trade agreement are the appropriate way of promoting that peace process. Okay. And that's one of my views.
Nuala.
Yes. Gavin said it wasn't, it didn't cut one way, but you could say David and Goliath didn't exactly cut just one way either, but that's about the best comparison I could make.
Okay.
Yes, pretty much everything he said, basically.
I agree with everything he said.
I think I'll be saying that a lot tonight.
Fair enough.
I disagree with you.
At your peril. I'm delighted to be sitting. Can you all see that I'm to the left of Jeremy Corbyn?
There's not many can say that.
Not many.
Right, Owen.
Unfortunately, of course, Nuala is to Jeremy's right from the point of view of the audience, but that's a separate issue.
Yeah, but we go.
To answer Patrick's question,
stage left.
One of the things, when many of us have the privilege of meeting activists from Palestine, they tell us that people in this city and people right across Ireland are already giving them hope. And what I'd say to everybody here, and you know this from your own experience, every time you mobilise in this community, every time you protest White Line out on the Falls or Antietam Road, every time you organise lobbying campaigns or you take a decision to boycott in your own life, you are giving people in Gaza and the West Bank hope. And that's not me saying it. That is what they tell us. And in fact, one of the things they say again and again is how remarkable the level of solidarity from people in Ireland is, often not matched, unfortunately, by the actions of the government in Dublin, particularly, as Jeremy pointed out, in relation to the EU-Israel trade agreements. So what I'd say is, first of all, we need to keep doing what we're doing, and we need to do more of it, particularly to force our governments at the EU level to take the action that's required. The one thing I suppose I'll disagree with Gareth is this, and Nuala put it right, this isn't a David and Goliath battle. And that's why boycott and divestment is so important. Because when you have
a
conflict...
Sorry, you mean it is a David and Goliath battle?
It absolutely is a David and Goliath battle. Apologies.
And you
is
mean
that,
Gavin, not Gareth?
Well, that's why I was happy you disagreed with Gareth.
This is the consequence of nerves in such a big crowd. Hopefully I'll settle after a while. But this is why this campaign is so important. Because for a group of people who have so few international allies among the powerful, what we need to ensure is the mass of ordinary people use every bit of power we have to support them in their struggle for something very basic, the right to live, the right to work, the right to control their own destiny. And I have to say, for all of those people involved in that boycott and divestment campaign, they deserve our support, encouragement, and we need to keep that campaign up until it achieves its objectives.
And what do you say to the people who fire the rockets into Israel?
I think they should stop, but I also think that if you're serious about a peace process, then we need to see genuine dialogue around the table. And I think the difficulty for people, for example, living in the appalling conditions of the Gaza Strip, is not only is there no peace process, but they're faced with an Israeli government that every single day is further undermining the most basic human conditions and basic human dignity. So if you want rockets from Gaza to stop, there's a very simple response. Stop the actions of the Israeli government in terms of their treatment of Palestinians, their expansion of settlements, and get them around the table to talk. That's the best way to stop violence
from
any side
in the
Middle
East. And recognise the
right
of Israel to exist?
I have absolutely no difficulty. No difficulty
with
that. No difficulty with that at all, but our friend here is absolutely right. Israel exists. Israel is recognised by all of the powerful elites across the world. And what we are saying as ordinary citizens is all we want is the right for Palestine to exist and for the Palestinian people to live in peace and security and human dignity.
Gavin,
it's a very basic demand.
As one against three here, I'm going to give you a chance to come back on that. What's your response to what you've heard?
Well, I guess the latter part of Patrick's question was about boycott, and it seems to have, Jeremy's described it as a legitimate form of protest against Israel. Owen is delighted that so many people in Palestine are encouraged by the solidarity shown by people here in Belfast and across Ireland. I can assure you that not one thing is achieved for the people of Palestine when those in solidarity go into Castle Court and turn over a cosmetic stand because the products happen to have ingredients from the Dead Sea. Nothing is achieved from that at all. How many people here have iPhones? I suspect the vast majority of people in this room have iPhones filled with components made in Israel.
Throw them in a heap in the floor immediately.
If you have a family member, you yourself are experiencing treatment at the moment for cancer, you will find that that drug that yourself or your family member may have been taken has been developed in Israel. So these boycotts have effects. And if you think that it is sensible to turn your nose on cancer treatment, to turn your nose on high-tech ophthalmic care, to turn off your iPhones, you will achieve nothing. You will damage those around you, and you will not advance the cause of Palestine one bit.
Patrick, you want to come back quickly? Yes, sorry, let's lead it. Yes, go ahead.
I'm a Jewish member
of the Island
Palestine Solidarity Campaign.
Just say that again for us.
I'm a Jewish member of the Ireland Palestine Solidarity Campaign. And a member of Jewish Voice for Just Peace Ireland. Okay, this is not an easy issue. But as Nuala and Jeremy and Owen said, it is not a balanced situation. 2,000 people died last summer. 2,000 people on the basis that the whole of the territory that was Palestine should be Judaized. And that is a wide-held belief in Israel. that settlements which are illegal, which are taking over the land of traditional villages that have been there for hundreds of years. And in those villages, in the villages that are left, there's no running water. There's no access to electricity on an ongoing basis. There's no access to olive groves, which have been farmed for hundreds of years. And yet the settlements, and as a Jew, I could go and live in a settlement and be an Israeli citizen. We have running water, we have swimming pools, we have armed guards, and we have an attitude that these people are second-class citizens. As a Jew, I oppose that.
Okay.
That's fine.
That's all. No, that's good. You've made your point, ma'am. Thank you very much indeed. Any more? Couple more points on this? Anyone got a hand up quickly? There's a gentleman hand over there in the glasses, the check shirt on. Yes, of course. Nuala, go ahead. Nuala.
Yeah, I was just going to say that up to a point, I take on board what Gavin is saying about the whole process of sanctions, that it's a bit like a lot of the problems, I think, in the world about where you buy your clothes from. Modern technology allows us to be very well informed about the derivation of a lot of the products that we have, and when you start to unpick and get down to component level, you find you don't want to use this makeup because it's tested on animals, these clothes are made by children in China, etc., etc. I think a coordinated and a very informed campaign to let people know what the true price of the products they're buying would be very useful. It's not as simple as don't buy oranges from South Africa was maybe in the 1980s, and I think the world is in a more technologically aware situation. So I take Gavin's, I think it's worth just saying that Gavin's point is, where do you draw the line? I think a good informed campaign to let people know what they are actually going to do. Did everybody in the room know that iPhone makes their components in Israel? I didn't. I don't have one, so I'm good.
You can stay. Let me just go to this gentleman here, just trying to get as many people in as possible.
I'm Stevie Downs. I haven't found an organisation yet that would accept me, so I'm just here me all now.
An independent, yeah.
According to the southeast of England, we're in an era of pragmatic politics.
Oh, so are you moving on? This is a new question.
I'm moving on.
Okay, I always think it's nice to start with an easy one, so I'm glad to... thank you, Patrick, for that. We'll maybe come back to it. But carry on. Sorry, I beg your pardon. I thought you were just adding a subsequent comment.
No, sorry, that's a new question.
Good.
Pragmatic politics. Yeah. So that's the area we're moved in, and we now get the electorate, apparently, to... we now get the politicians that are meant to reflect what the electorate wants. Now, I'm just wondering, how could the DUP take the courageous step of moving its politics a little bit beyond just mere reaction? And part of its political lexicon is, from my experience, is usually no. Now, that's one angle. Now, Sinn Féin, I'm wondering if... if you could move the politics on here beyond the entrenchment that the Good Friday Agreement has done, which is to rely on a veto. It could be argued that in relying on that veto, you are in many ways accepting the sectarian structures that were part of these six counties.
I'm just going to ask you and everyone, try to make a question to question rather than a treatise, because it gets us through more please. So if you'd have a... that's two questions, each of them.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's
same good. Question to each. All right, so, Owen.
Well, I haven't finished with Jeremy yet.
I think you've had enough. I think we get the gist. Thank you. So, go ahead, Owen.
I don't recognise, I suppose, the accusation in the second part of your question, in the sense that almost everything that Sinn Féin has been trying to do, both in the lead-up to the Belfast Agreement and since, with our attempts to secure its full implementation, is the very opposite of veto politics. It is all about trying to build new relationships, either with former opponents in the DUP,
councils. Oh, and let's get right down to it. Welfare reform. You accepted it, then you rejected
it.
Why not accept it? We don't need a historical lecture. We don't have time for the whole history. Welfare reform, if you accepted it, would put the Stormont House Agreement and the peace process back on course, some suggest.
No, you're more than welcome to answer the question for me if that makes it easier for you.
No, I just want to...
Here's the point.
No.
My first point...
I'm asking you to answer the question.
And I'm going to answer the question. Yeah. I was first of all asked by the gentleman, and then I'll come to your question, which is related to it. Yeah. So the first thing is this. And welfare reform is a very good example of it. In all of our efforts, what Sinn Féin is trying to do is to get away from veto politics, to build new relationships and to resolve problems. And for 2 years, we were engaged in detailed discussions and negotiations, not only with our friends in the DUP, but also with the British Treasury and the British government to try and resolve the issue of welfare reform. There are mountains of paper of proposals tabled by Sinn Féin time and time again. Noel is absolutely wrong, although I'm not surprised in that, to say that we accepted welfare reform and then rejected it, then accepted and then rejected it again.
The issue is this. I didn't say that. I said you accepted it, then rejected it.
The issue is this.
This is what you did do.
Is that we are against taking money out of the pockets of the poorest people in our society. And for 2 years, we have been trying to reach an agreement on how to avoid that. We thought we had reached an agreement with Stormont Castle. There was a financial package put in place. And that financial package met our conditions of protecting those people in greatest need in our society. It's not Sinn Féin who's walked away from that agreement, much and all as there are parts of it that are very difficult for us. It is the DUP who have reneged on the financial commitments. And until we get back round the table and deal with the substantive issue of welfare reform, which is impact on the poorest in our society, its impact on the domestic economy, and the fact that no political party in this part of Ireland has a mandate to introduce those types of savage cuts on our community, then this debate isn't going anywhere. So Sinn Féin isn't using a veto. We want to solve this problem, but Tory cuts, including the increased Tory cuts that David Cameron is now looking to introduce, are not good for anybody. And we are
no
proud to say...
No pragmatism, it's all about principle.
We want to find a solution, absolutely. The difficulty is that the solution cannot be pushing more people into poverty. Okay. It simply makes no sense.
Okay. Oh, thanks so much. Gavin, it's all your fault. The DUP won't move.
Well, no, it's all David Cameron's fault, not the separate issue.
Well, we'll come to that in a moment.
Yeah. Well, I was going to respond to the gentleman first, but then I was fearful that if I was negative in my response, that would be yet another no. So I'm not going to provide that for you. I have to say, I think you're getting a huge level of disservice from the politics you've just heard there about welfare reform. It's easy to treat people like fools. And that is what I believe you're getting in the current discourse around welfare reform. Because pragmatic politics means that you go back to the first agreement that we had with Martin McGuinness. And you were right the first time, Noel, it was once agreed, then withdrawn, then agreed again at Stormont House, and then withdrawn yet again. As if we in some way provide a surplus to the United Kingdom. As if we operate within this great utopia where money is not an issue. So pragmatic politics, sir, involves rebalancing this economy. But pragmatic politics also means that we have to operate within our means. And I say within our means.
It's fair to say that, but you and Sinn Féin equally want to protect the most vulnerable in society.
Absolutely.
They are doing it by opposing austerity. You're doing it by accepting it.
Well, in protecting... Well, clap away. Don't you realise that in not implementing welfare reform, the most vulnerable in our society are hurting already? Don't you realise that decisions that hamper progress within the Northern Ireland Executive as a direct consequence of not having cash available is hurting the most vulnerable? Do you realise that it took an additional 5 months to tell people within our early years sector that money would be available for them to continue? Do you not think that those most disadvantaged young people within our society deserve those levels of services within early years, and the money wasn't available because we're getting fined £2 million every week?
Why aren't you making the case that Martin McGuinness is making, that Northern Ireland is a special case and needs more money?
One. Because there's only so many times you can make those same arguments. I mean, Jeremy made some comments, and I'm not attacking him on this, but he made some comments either today or yesterday about welfare reform and what is required. What was agreed at Stormont House was the best welfare package available in the United Kingdom, better than the Scots have and the SNP have implemented, which is better than what we have in England and Wales through Westminster. And the £300 million, which isn't a great sum in a UK context, but in a Northern Ireland context, that hardship fund that was agreed as through Stormont House is there to remove the excesses of Tory austerity cuts. That's real politics. That's pragmatic politics. And whether people want to keep putting their head in the sand and not accept it, for as long as they do that, they continue to hurt the most vulnerable. Okay. The Department of Education, Nolan, I think you conducted this interview last week, have been faced with a proposition that rather than give those children in primary one to primary three in most need free school meals, that actually there is great benefit for every child in primary one to primary three. DE won't even consider it. Won't even consider it because whilst they continue to fund some pet projects, they refuse to accept that actually 1 month's worth of fines would adequately cover something that would drastically change their opportunities and life experience.
Gavin, thanks. Nuala. Pragmatism.
I hear people using the word pragmatism when it works in their favour. It's pragmatic, maybe. You know, it seems to be a pragmatic approach when you're asking people with very little already to put up with having even less. And yet when you the government at the moment and the previous government bailed out banks, did everything that they could to keep the financial structures that got us into this position in the first place going. That's pragmatism as well. Personally, for me, I think what we need here is an opposition that can say we don't agree, we're not Tory supporters and we don't want Tory policy.
So that's when it works in your favour?
No, I believe the bigger picture. It's all politics is always how far back do you go? Do you keep waterboarding last year, the year before, the year before? The government can move fast when it wants to. It can find money from somewhere when it wants to go to war, when it wants to do business and make money for individuals. Are you allowed to swear here?
Where's the organiser?
It's absolute bollocks. It is, and not to be sucking up to Jeremy Corbyn. You've said, Noel, everybody's sort of going, oh, you know, he's the devil in the corner. People are fed up with being treated like numpties. And I think what we lack in Northern Ireland, the way our structures are, and we all understand why the petition of concern was there. We understand why there had to be cross, assembly agreement for everything. It really doesn't work if we want to have grown-up politics here. And I think a pragmatic approach would be to say, let's draw a line under and create a new setup at Stormont that actually reflects what real issues matter to people here. It's not orange and green anymore. Let's stop pretending that it is.
Jeremy, you've been called a lot of things, but I've never seen you called a pragmatist. What do you think about pragmatism as a political philosophy?
Well, life is pretty pragmatic in many ways, how you go through things. But I think you have to approach things from the point of view of a principle as well. And on the issues of welfare reform, the bill that's now before Parliament and the budget that's now before Parliament, first of all, takes benefits away from the children of larger families. The third child onwards loses out. It takes £12 billion out of the welfare budget as a whole. It puts in a welfare cap of 23,000 in London, 20,000 outside of London. And it knowingly and quite deliberately is going to cut into the living standards of some of the poorest and most vulnerable people in our society. And I have...
Sorry, Jeremy, I'm going to ask you about the benefit cap. Because Harriet Harman said that there was a feeling in the nation...
I was going to give you a long answer, actually, no, but you want a short one.
Well, let's have a few short ones.
Okay, short. I'm sorry, I'm too long.
Harriet Harman said that there was an appetite in the nation for a welfare cap. A lot of people think £23,000 if you're not employed and you have a family, which is well up there with the average industrial wage for people who are out working 40 hours a week, is a fair thing. What do you think?
Can I tell you this? I represent an inner London constituency where, because of the combination of high unregulated rents, a welfare cap that's being imposed, families, yes, are receiving some, not very many families, 25,000, now 23,000 a year. Are they living the life of Riley as a result of it? Absolutely not.
Well, neither are the people who are working for that kind of money.
That money goes straight to the landlord. And because the rents have gone up so much further, we are now undertaking in Britain the social cleansing of central London and many other cities by this cap. We need to stop having a welfare system that subsidises high rents and low wages and make sure it actually does something to benefit the needs of the very poorest and most vulnerable people in our society. Okay. And when they say... I disagree with Harriet on this, when they say there's...
You lost the election. There is an appetite in the country for that kind of policy.
We don't know the reasons why everybody voted the way they did. I would suspect that one of the reasons we didn't win the election was that we were not offering something clear enough as an alternative to what the austerity of the Tories were offering. But back to the welfare issue, there is also the way in which people with disabilities have been treated, the way in which the availability for work tests have been done, the people that have taken their own lives in desperation when they've been passed as fit for work when they're clearly not. And also this whole language, the language of some of the media, of blaming everyone that exercises their right to claim a benefit, a social security benefit. Can't we live in a society where we're proud to have healthcare as a human right, free at the point of use? Can't we also be proud of the idea of a society that does prevent anyone falling into destitution rather than forcing people into destitution?
I just want to ask one question.
Yeah,
you've
spoken
about people's quantitative easing, I think was the term you used.
Yes, it was, yeah.
And the criticism of that is you're talking about... reduce the deficit through increased investment, public spending. People say that brings higher inflation, higher interest rates, which hit poorer people.
Well, quantitative easing paid into banks apparently is of nil effect to the rest of the community. I'm suggesting that instead of quantitative easing paid into banks, instead we use that as a point of start, not the point of end, the point of start of a national investment bank that can improve infrastructure throughout the UK, that can also invest in high-tech manufacturing, high-technology green industries, which I think we need far more of. We have too many highly qualified graduates all over who are not able to find work because we have an unbalanced economy where we've done far too much in the direction of financial services and far too little in the direction of manufacturing industry and what the skills that we traditionally have are. That's why I'm suggesting this National Investment Bank. You can't cut your way to prosperity by the process of austerity, cutting public expenditure. You end up reducing tax income. You end up borrowing more because the tax income goes down. You then cut further. You go into a cycle of
Ireland's economy has recovered, and many say the UK's economy is recovering as a result of austerity.
And look at the levels of poverty and the suffering that has gone alongside that.
We could talk all night. We must get a few more people in.
I thought we were going to talk all night, actually.
All four of us, though. Right, lady here in the second row there. Go ahead.
I know it's an occupational hazard, but if you could stop debating with the people on the panel, then maybe West Belfast could
absolutely
get a chance to talk back.
Exactly the point I'm making. Thank you.
It's actually called West Belfast
absolutely
Talks Back.
Fair
anyway,
point.
My question
but I mustn't
is,
let them away with things,
no,
you say.
No, no, no. But if you let
That's
people...
That's why I'm here.
Sorry, you're not letting me talk.
I know.
if you could maybe let people...
Oh, come on.
Excuse me.
Get on with it then.
If you let people direct the question towards the person that they want to speak to, maybe more people would get speaking.
Yes, yeah. So, thank you for the lesson. Go ahead.
Right. My question is directed towards Gavin Robinson. As a barrister and a lawmaker, I just wondered, Gavin brought up the point about people in Castle Court having protests. I just wondered what Gavin's view was on Trudell Avenue, because there's a protest been going on there for 2 years. It's actually cost £23 billion. And we're talking about austerity. He's in Westminster. How does he actually stand there when they talk about austerity measures and saving money, and he knows that £23 million have been wasted in Trudell Avenue, money that could have gone to his constituents all over Northern Ireland for hip operations, heart operations. We all have parents. We all have people who need health care. And this money is being wasted. I just wondered what his view was on that.
Gavin.
I guess it takes us back to the very first question on how you approach these things. My answer to it is a 5-minute parade. A 5-minute parade. the ability, sorry, I know because I'm allowed to talk now, you see, that's the idea. If you were challenging
Noel.
You see?
This is what
but
happens.
The answer to it could be a five-minute parade. And the answer to it could be people accepting that actually, even though they may be entirely intolerant, that others within our society have a right to exist and to express themselves as well.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, you've asked him a question. I think he's answered it. This is,